The military is struggling to address a surge in mental health problems being reported among returning soldiers. As the New York Times has reported, suicides are at the highest level on record. What's happening? Why? In a moment, we talk to Nurse Joyce Riley and Dr. Doug Rocky about this horrible situation. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Two special guests for you tonight will take calls in the last hour. Nurse Joyce Riley has been a director of nursing for four institutions. She also served as a captain in the USAF in support of Operation Desert Storm, flying active duty missions on a C-130 aircraft from Alaska to Cuba. Her experience as a medical legal testifying expert in medical malpractice trials have given her the background to investigate the truth about the Gulf War illness. She presently serves as a spokesperson for the American Gulf War Veterans Association. She has her own radio show called The Power Hour, and we'll give you more information on that as well. Let me introduce again back to Coast. She's been a regular with me since 1997, Joyce Riley. Joyce, how are you?
I am blessed, and I am so glad to be here tonight to tell you what's going on. I'm just really honored. Thank you so much, George.
Thank you. And, of course, we had Joyce on just about a week ago, and I said, Joyce, we're going to do a major program on this, and this, of course, being PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, that so many of our soldiers are coming back from all these wars, and they're all screwed up. Dr. Doug Rocky is with us, a retired major of the U.S. Army, and was the director of the U.S. Depleted Uranium Project. Doug authored the official Pentagon training video on depleted uranium usage, protection, and treatment. The DOD failed to ever show this video because of the severity of the consequences of the depleted uranium. Major Rocky appears in the Beyond Treason DVD as well. Here's Dr. Doug Rocky. Doug, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much, and God bless for having us on, sir.
Joyce, I want you to set the stage for us and tell us the problem, the scope of the problem that we're dealing with.
We're dealing with a situation that is absolutely out of control. One out of every five suicides in this country today, and I'm talking about across the board of all suicides, is a veteran. The homeless veterans are absolutely off the scale. The problem with the homicides and the suicides of the veterans is, as a result, I believe, because of the failure to treat these veterans, the failure to appropriately diagnose them, and the failure to care for the returning veterans. What we're looking at now are veterans that are absolutely losing it. They have no way to get any kind of help. The VA is not there for them, and when they do go to get help, they're placed on SSRI drugs or psychotropic drugs or risperidone, Wellbutrin, whatever, which only makes the problem worse. And so we have a Department of Defense now that is attempting to deny this whole thing by calling it PTSD or calling it brain injury, TBI brain injuries, and leaving these guys basically to fend for themselves. And that's why we're seeing this incredible amount of group of veterans that have no place to go, nothing to do. And the DOD now wants to downsize the military because they know exactly what I used to tell you back in 97. And that is that if we don't get them out of the military now, they're going to be sick, they're going to show up as sick, and we're going to have some explaining to do. So to get them out without compensation, they're letting them go now.
And they're doing, and they've got it down to a science now, Joyce, don't they? They know when to get them out. They know how to get out of this situation before they get bitten for it.
Bingo. And in fact, Senator Paul Wellstone, he told me in a conference call, and I know that Dr. Rocky, whom I have so much respect for, he also was involved in this, said that about 80% of the Gulf War veterans in 1995 had been discharged, so that we had basically a new military because these guys were sick and because they didn't want to compensate them. He was aware of this factor. And so that brings in Dr. Doug Rocky, who is probably the most professional, established person on the subject of depleted uranium, because he and I both agree that a lot of this so-called PTSD or neurological impairment that we're seeing from these troops that are committing suicides and homicides is that they are affected adversely, horrendously, by depleted uranium.
Doug, let's bring you in here. And first of all, give us a little bit more background than the bio on your work as the director of the U.S. Depleted Uranium Project. And Doug, please explain to some of us who might not be aware of what depleted uranium actually is.
Well, thank you very much. Well, my military career started back in 1967. I first enlisted in the U.S. Air Force and spent my 2 years in Vietnam, came back home and got out, went to college, and spent that time. Then back in 1980, I went back into the Illinois Army National Guard as a combat medic. And then rapidly, within 3 years, the Army Reserve came to me and said, we need you as an instructor, an expert in nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, and emergency medicine on the battlefield. And I go, thank you very much. And for 3 years, I taught that all over the Midwest and beyond. And then in 1986, all of a sudden, they came on down from a place called Fort Sheridan, Illinois, and said, plop, plop, fizz, fizz, you're going from a senior NCO to a second lieutenant. Some 19 years after I first came in, and ended up on the command staff of an expert in nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, which includes all the radiological stuff and hazardous materials and preventive medicine. And then Desert Storm came along, and, as everybody knows, Iraq absolutely had chemical and biological materials prior to start Operation Desert Storm in 1990.
That's because we gave it to them, right?
Absolutely. The Regal Commission report, which, you know, again, I think you've got to post it on your website or you can. I know Joyce has it on her website, definitely for sure, with the Power Hour and Beyond Treason. So we knew that they had them, and our team was very specifically assigned. Now, this is a big difference from Vietnam, where in Vietnam, our team was assigned to kill and destroy. In Desert Storm now, because of all our expertise and experience, we were assigned to bring them back alive.
Mm-hmm.
And we made the decision in December of 1990 at the command headquarters, this is with Norman Schwarzkopf and Chuck Horner and everybody else, that we would blow up Iraq's chemical stockpiles in place to prevent the deliberate use of them on the coalition forces. Anybody has any questions about that, they can obviously go to General Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero.
That's right.
Go to page 390 and just read it for yourself. The reality is, so we did. And as a consequence, we released all these chemical and biological stockpiles, hazardous materials, all of the destruction hazardous materials from the infrastructure released back on the troops and got everybody sick, extraordinarily sick to begin with. Then the ground war came along. And because of the anticipation of chemical, biological, because of the anticipated, which ended up turning non-real threat of Iraqi armor, we decided to use uranium munitions.
And why? Is it just a tough type substance?
Well, it's incredibly killing. It's the best killing machine that we've ever invented. I mean, it was invented by the Germans at the end of World War II. The U.S. military picked it up in the 60s, and then by Desert Storm came around, it was ready in full deployment for our military. Depleted uranium munitions are the radioactive byproduct of the enrichment process where the Department of Energy makes reactor fuel and nuclear weapons.
They're like little dirty bombs, aren't they?
Oh, they're perfect little dirty bombs. What they are, you've got different ones, a kinetic energy penetrator, which is like a gigantic dart of solid radioactive materials, uranium. And there's a whole bunch of really nasty isotopes in there. And what happens when you throw this through the air, or it's fired through the air, it goes extraordinarily high velocity. On impact, which it's already on fire, impact, it breaks up, and it sends just incredible amounts of radioactive particles through the air, causing secondary explosions and fires beyond comprehension. There's nothing that survives.
So it's a destructive weapon in that it really does have some explosive power to it.
Yeah, the explosive power is from secondary explosions and detonations because, you know, you're throwing a uranium. Think about this, a whole room full of BBs moving extraordinarily high velocity, all in fire.
Okay.
Anything that can burn, burns. That's why they use it on apartment buildings, water treatment facilities, hospitals, everything else. You know, houses, bunkers, you name it. And then against the armor, the kinetic energy penetrator just penetrates everything and causes massive secondary explosions. And when I did the research on this for the U.S. Army, and it ended up being all of NATO, at the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada, we blew everything up. It was incredible what we learned. So those are kinetic energy penetrators. For example, the Abrams tank fires a single round that's over 10 pounds of solid uranium. It's the perfect dirty bomb. Then the A-10 fires one that's over 3/4 of a pound, and then get them all the way on down to the, you know, machine guns and, handheld rifles.
What's the intent, Doug? Is it to destroy structure or to kill off people instantly?
Well, everything. Everything and everything and everything.
Okay.
And that's what we learned. Then we have what we call the cluster bombs, and these are the ATEM and the PETEM. So think about a softball where the outer casing of the softball is radioactive materials and is filled with high explosives.
Okay.
Then we have the cluster bombs and everything else. So this is the perfect killing machine. And during Desert Storm, what they called it was the silver bullet. Well, the commanding general at that time, when all this stuff is happening, they got really worried. And as you've seen, you've got the documentation, the paperwork support, everything.
Yeah.
What happened is they got scared. And all of a sudden, here's this order. It came on down from the Pentagon and told General Schwarzkopf personally, find Doug Rocky and tell him to clean it up. And also his chief of staff did, and we went forward to start cleaning up the mess.
Which is almost impossible.
That's what I learned. It was almost impossible. We did the best we could during Desert Storm. We had 15 Abrams tanks that were destroyed by friendly fire. U.S. Abrams tanks that were destroyed by friendly fire. We brought 9 back to the United States. We buried a lot. We had 16 Abrams tanks that were destroyed, and we brought those back. And then, obviously, we had incredible number of casualties. By my count, it was 123 individuals that survived the friendly fire during the Desert Storm. And the most frightening thing is, and Joyce has been totally involved in this, even within the last few months, I'm still fighting to get medical care for Operation Desert Storm friendly fire casualties.
You mean all these years later?
That's correct. That's
Jeez.
Absolutely correct. And myself and my team, and then we've lost more on our team recently. Another member of our team underwent cancer surgery just here in this last
week.
Oh,
my God.
So it's the reality, is it? And so we got assigned to do it.
And Doug, let me ask you this, too. I mean, in addition to the tragedy with our troops, and that's the main reason for this show tonight, aren't we also talking about a lot of innocent Iraqis who have been afflicted with radiation poisoning and everything else that is associated with depleted uranium?
And all the other hazardous materials and destruction, absolutely millions of people. So all over the Balkans, all over the Middle East. One thing that we do know from the research, and even the British Royal Academy of Sciences confirmed this, the contamination has reached all the way into Northern Europe and beyond.
Oh, my God. Now, are the people in these regions who live there, do they know about this, and do they blame us for this?
They're slowly becoming aware of it, but just like the U.S. military, all this information has been deliberately hidden from everybody. The other thing which you find is the Department of Defense is my old buddies, all the way up to the Secretary of Defense, and Joyce and I have a very, I don't know how we'd put this, Joyce, a good friend of ours that's in charge of this.
Well, I think you're being kind.
Yeah. And they just totally deny any correlation between the health and environmental effects, even though all of their internal directors' memorandums confirm it all. And they direct total medical care for everybody, not, you know, months or months later, but, you know, within 24 to 72 hours. And you also have a copy of that directive, you know, sent from the Pentagon, confirming all this. But they just totally disregard because of the incredible, incredible adverse health and environmental effects from not just depleted uranium, but all of the hazard materials, all of the pesticides, all of the immunizations, all of the destroyed toxins from the infrastructure. So you have an incredible toxic soup that is affecting the neurophysiology of the brain. And then on top of the neurophysiology of the brain being affected, I mean, it's just like, think about, you know, sucking poisons into your brain. It doesn't work. Then what you have is the real fear of combat, where we've all been there, and the song you led into when I was listening, you know, Barry McGuire's Doesn't Say It Any Better at the end of it, you know, You don't believe in war, but what this gun you're carrying.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get any better than that for explaining PTSD. And then so you have total fear, where you go from complete sheer tranquility to sheer terror in a nanosecond, and you go back and forth continuously. You have the neurotoxicity, and then the last part that after, 35 years in the military plus, I had to come to the realization, with Joyce had to come to the realization, it's all based on lies.
The whole thing.
The whole thing is based on lies. So you have these three incredibly complex interactive components affecting the health, and both the physiological and psychological health of our military. And the VA says, well, we'll help you when you can. Oh, you need a PTSD appointment? Sure, you need help, but hey, let's see, we get an appointment, you can get one. You might have to wait a month or 2 months, or we'll get to you when we can. And when we get to you when you can, well, you get 50 minutes of, well, here's how you can relax.
What was the breaking point for you, Doug? What was the point where, here you are, you're in charge of the depleted uranium project here to get this mess cleaned up, to treat, protect. Somewhere along the line, you said, enough is enough. What happened?
Well, this is a very personal story. Sergeant First Class John Sitton from Springfield, Illinois, out of the 92nd Medical Battalion, was responsible for setting up all the medical evacuation procedures for the 3rd Medical Command for the U.S. military during Desert Storm.
Okay.
He was totally affected, and served as a director of the DU project and was working on more projects for the government on environmental problems, just kind of like whenever they had a problem, they called our team. It's kind of like what we call jack-in-the-boxes. I got a phone call from Pastor, and a phone call from Pastor Sherman Reed, who since retired and lives down near Nashville. And he said, John Sitton wants to talk to you. He's dying of cancer in Springfield Memorial Hospital. The VA has refused to help him.
And you were from that neck of the woods, too, right?
Well, yeah, he's my best friend, not only in the military, best friend in civilian life.
I'm out of St. Louis, so I wasn't too far from where you were.
Yeah, and so got a call. I called the hospital. This was in the middle of the night. The nurse answers the Springfield Memorial Hospital, said, John wants to talk to you. He's waiting to talk to you, Doug. You guys are best friends. You were in Desert Storm together. You put the projects together. You put the programs together. You guys did it, and he's dying. He came on the phone. They put him on the phone, and he said, Doug, you and Rollo, our other best friend, our team member, what you do, I'm going to die, but one thing I want done before I die is I want to go salmon fishing on Lake Michigan out of Chicago with my family before I die. And then, even though the military has done this to me, I want to be buried in my uniform.
Yeah. Well, he loved it. He loved this country.
Right. He was, in Vietnam and came back, like all of us, also in Vietnam, again, because of his expertise, he was recalled for Desert Storm. That's incredibly different. And so I called and I said, okay, we can do this. They have, what's Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Yeah, know it well.
They got it all set up, okay? We got him on an ambulance. They transported him up to Chicago to wherever they get on the boats. They got him on a boat. They went fishing. He went salmon fishing out on Lake Michigan on a hospital gurney with his family.
Jeez, so he wasn't even strong enough to walk around.
No, not at all. And so he's fishing and taking his family fishing from a hospital gurney on the back of a fishing boat.
Oh, my gosh.
And he came back, and he died within 24 hours after he returned. Well, we'd been asking, trying to get medical care and everything, and along with him and the rest of our team, and as the rest of our team started dying, all the friendly fire and everybody else, in effect, I said, that's it. And so I had to make the conscious choice, what do I do? Do I speak out? What do I do? And I said, I'm going to still work within the system. So I stayed within the military. I'm still in the military, in the reserve, and went outside trying to get it solved. And to this day, Joyce and myself, and there's a handful of other people, are trails trying to solve the problem of getting medical care for all of the casualties in the U.S. military going back to Vietnam.
How many do you think there could be?
Well, when I look at the actual casualty numbers, and again, you have this, Joyce has it, you can post it on your website. What we do know from Operation Desert Storm, and General, this is real interesting, it gets real complex.
Hold on for a sec, though. We're going to hit this break. We'll come back with the complete phrase here on how many casualties you think might be out there. I'm George Norrie with our special guests tonight, Nurse Joyce Riley and Dr. Doug Rocky. on Coast to Coast AM. Now, by the time I wake up Wednesday morning, I would like to add 2,000 more free members who will follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook. That's the correct jargon these days. So all you have to do, no cost, go to coasttocoastam.com, look for the Facebook icon up there in the right-hand corner, click that, follow us, like us, follow us on Twitter as well. Right now we're sitting at 113,000. I want it at 115,000 by tomorrow morning. If you would do that for me, you can start that right now. We'll be back in a moment with Nurse Joyce Riley and Dr. Doug Rocky as we talk about this incredible story of depleted uranium and what it's doing on the planet. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We'll get to Nurse Joyce Riley in just a second, but Dr. Doug, you were talking about casualties and how many we thought might be out there because of depleted uranium. Go ahead.
Well, when we look at the casualties, it's hard to separate what is DU and what is not. I know from the numbers that were totally involved and exposed to DU, you know, what their health effects are, and we know what that is, so that's incredible numbers. What the Department of Veteran Affairs had did is publish their casualty report. What we do know from Operation Desert Storm, out of the 600,000 that participated in Desert Storm in 1990 and 1991, the VA in their latest report, which is just a couple months old, totally acknowledged over 300,000 are having serious medical problems, seeking medical care, and as a consequence, they're trying to figure out how to provide that. That's just for Desert Storm alone. That's over 50% of the force that went to Desert Storm has serious medical problems. And the number dead, back in 2008 when the VA quit publishing the report, it was over 90,000 at that time out of 600,000. So over 300,000, 90,000 dead from Desert Storm. That's over 50% of the force. When we go to Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, the current war, the Department of Veteran Affairs' last report came out in October, okay, so it's 3 months old. And at that time, they acknowledged the total number of casualties was at 711,986.
Jeez.
And now these numbers are there totally, I mean, if you know where to find them, you can get them, but they're hidden from the public. You will never see them reported on the evening news. You will never see them in a local newspaper because we have, with 711,986, just from Operation Iraqi Freedom, 300,000 from Desert Storm, that's over 1 million. And they can never admit to anybody that because we've gone into these wars, and when we go back to Vietnam, it becomes incredibly higher, we have incredible casualties, incredible suffering, and the medical care is not available. If it is available, it's ineffective, and in most cases, is delayed and denied. And so as a consequence, and this is a conversation I had yesterday with my own doctors at the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois, where I go for care, is if you're going for PTSD care, I mean, like, okay, I need an appointment. Well, we're overwhelmed. We don't have appointments available. We can get you in a month. And so the guy can't get in for PTSD care. If he needs physiological care, he's lucky to get into it. Once you get into it, the first thing you hear is, there were no toxic exposures, there's no health effects, and there's nobody sick at all from any of these exposures. But the VA's own internal reports, and I want to go over this number by number because it's frightening.
Okay.
And it's going to take a couple of minutes, but let's do it.
You're on for 3 hours, Doug. You're not going anywhere.
Thank you very much. We're seeing exactly the same percentages for casualties and diagnosis from Desert Storm to Iraqi Freedom. Almost absolutely identical proportion of diagnostic codes, okay? The numbers are just different. For Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, 15% of the force, or over about 108,000, have infectious and parasitic diseases.
15%?
Correct. 1% has malignant cancers, and the number on my team that have died from cancers and dying and have it right now is staggering. That's at 10,000. Benign tumors is at 44,000. Endocrine, nutritional, and metabolic problems, 31% of the force are 220,000 individuals. Leukemia, frightening, okay? Now, these guys, everybody's extraordinarily healthy when you get deployed, and then you spend 6, 9 months or a year over there, and you come back extraordinarily sick. 25,000 cases of leukemia. 3.5% of the force has leukemia.
Oh.
Jeez. Mental disorders, PTSD, all of this thing. The VA is acknowledging in their formal report from October, 52%, 368,000 individuals. When we get to the neurological problems, and my neurological problems are staggering, as everybody else's, from all these toxic exposures, depleted uranium, pesticides, all the burn pits and everything else. 44% of the force at 310,360 have serious neurological problems. Now, that goes to show what we have seeing day by day, why all these guys are having car accidents or motorcycle accidents or accidents on the job. Their neuromuscular function is so affected that they can't function properly.
Yeah, that's over and above the frustration, the suicides, the murders.
Absolutely.
This is just something that's destroying other lives.
Correct. And now you have to understand, everybody was extraordinarily healthy. 147,267, or 21%, have serious cardiac problems. Now, Joyce is a cardiac nurse. That's her specialty. And, you know, it's staggering. Respiratory, 183,000, 26% have serious respiratory problems. And it affects me. And what we've learned, and the respiratory, you can never smoke again in your life. You know, prednisone and other steroids, they can help control it, but you never know with the weather. It's horrible. Digestive. We look at digestive. This is explosive diarrhea, constipation. You never know where you're going to be. When the diarrhea call, yeah, hits, we call it cracking the porcelain gut. It's explosive beyond comprehension. And for me, they've had to go in Roto-Rooter, you know, and repair all the damage repeatedly. 254,000, 36% of the force.
Now, these numbers that you cite, Doug, could one person have many afflictions? So that number, we may not be talking about, let's say, 200-some thousand separate troops. Can one person, for example, have 6 ailments?
That is correct.
And would be in those numbers?
That is correct. Okay. We have the actual end number for these diagnoses is 711,000. 750,000.
Gosh. Now, but how many people are we talking about? 200,000? 400,000?
No. What's 750,000.
That total individuals.
Correct.
It's an epidemic.
Correct, it is.
It's a pandemic.
Well, that's exactly correct. And then when we start getting the unitary, it's over 102,000. We get to the rash. Now, the rash is horrible. The rash is, mine is back again in full force right now with the weather here in Illinois, 148,000. We get to the muscular skeletal system, connective tissue. And, you know, I was lucky. I got incredibly good surgeons at the Spinal Center here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. 397,000 have serious musculoskeletal connective tissue problems. We had 3 on our team that have undergone major surgery by the same doctor to repair us. I mean, you know, the doctor's going, what happened, you guys? 3 people on the same team, and I got to go in and do the repair? You got 360,000 with ill-defined, and then the injuries and poisoning is at 201,000. So, and again, the numbers, the percentages we're seeing match from Desert Storm to Iraqi Freedom during Freedom. So when we started following all this for years and years and years and working with it and having written the original reports and recommended the actual medical care, as you saw, you got a copy where the general gave me a medal for recommending medical care. You know, like, thank you, do it, but now we're not going to do it.
Joyce, let me bring you in here for a second. When you and I started talking about the Gulf War syndrome back in 97, you, of course, way before that, was depleted uranium on anybody's mind at the time?
Well, it was, because there was a book by a former attorney general, Ramsey Clark. He had written a book about the subject, and it was on the minds, not as much, though, and it certainly was not in my vocabulary that much, because I was not familiar with the munitions, nor was it disclosed how much depleted uranium was being used at that time. So we were more concerned at that time with the vaccines, oil well fires, those kinds of things. And I think all emphasis from the Department of Defense was off of DU. They didn't really want people knowing about depleted uranium. And when it brings us up to the point where we are today and this huge number of people that are sick as a result of their service, I want to add that the PTSD, the problems that these people are having in acclimating back into real life, is not because we sent a bunch of head cases over there to fight a war. That's not it. The problem is they've got this neurological damage as a result of the service of the depleted uranium or the toxic effects, environmental effects of the burn pits, as Dr. Rocky said. But let me give you an alarming statistic here. The VA admitted in April of 2011 that in that month alone, they got 14,000 suicide calls. 14,000. 450 a day. 450 suicide calls a day.
How could they even handle it? That is crazy.
And they've had over 400,000 suicide calls in the last 4 years. I mean, this is unbelievable. We didn't send all these people over there that were head cases just waiting to happen. These are people that had something happen to their brains, happen to their bodies. They come back, and then they are kicked to the side of the curb and told, well, gee, we don't see anything wrong with you, and you're out of the military. Let me give you an example of what happened.
Okay.
This is a troop here. We started raising some money to help out some veterans who just literally weren't getting any compensation. Now, most people say, well, we've got VA. We've got people helping these people. We've got disability compensation. Listen to this. Army PFC Tony Moore, we were raising money, 27 of New Mexico, three tours duty in Iraq. He was hit by an IED. He has been home 28 months, 2 years. He is trying to exist as a double amputee. He has exhausted all of his savings, needs help for his rent, is begging that someone will pay $285 for his rent, and he has enlisted his senator's help to expedite his claim. Wait a minute. Here's a guy who lost both legs, IED, his vehicle exploded, lost both legs, and he's trying to raise $285, and the local Baptist church there helped him with his rent that month. And he has no compensation yet?
That's crazy.
People don't know this is going on. No wonder these guys put a gun to their head.
Yet they can feed the faces on Wall Street.
Oh, my gosh. We could go into that forever. And these guys are desperate. Imagine you come home as a double amputee, and the after your legs are healed up or your stumps are healed up, it's kind of like, well, good luck to you. So these guys are sent out, and they have no recourse. No help. And you have all these incredible Memorial Day and Veterans Day hanging the wreath and the president with the wreath and doing all these things for dead veterans. But you don't see the veterans that are alive, that are struggling and that are dying, literally dying for some help.
They're hidden away, aren't they, Joyce?
They're hidden away. They are certainly not available for you to see them. Here's an example, another example, 28-year-old Texan. Suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, they say. He appeared on the suicide prevention campaign for the Department of Defense on telling veterans, go to the VA, don't commit suicide. And he himself committed suicide. His name is Clay Hunt. And he himself committed suicide. You cannot get help. You go to a VA, if you call them and tell them that you are desperate, that you want to commit suicide, they'll tell you they can see you in a month, like Dr. Rocky said. That's no way to treat suicide. And so these people are committing the largest number ever of suicides. We're losing more of our troops from suicide than we are from duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. And these are not people that are weak. Some of these people that were the first in their PT groups, their physical training groups. Some of these are some of the smartest, brightest people. And yet they are either committing suicide or they're killing somebody that they love very much. And I was dealing with and did go to court with one man who was a captain and a commander of a Black Hawk helicopter unit, and he killed his wife, and nobody can understand why. He did not even understand why.
Do they even know what they're doing?
They don't.
No.
They don't. In fact, they come out of this like they have been in a fog. They say they had missing time. Now, they all don't get together and all the murderers talk about this and say, hey, let's say we had missing time. They all say, something happened. I don't even remember what happened for the last 3 hours or the last 6 hours, which brings to light some strange things that might be happening, and I don't know the answer to that. But when I interview these troops that have killed somebody in their family that they love the most, they always say the same thing. I have no idea either that I did it or why I did it. One young man burned his house down with his wife and his new baby twins in the house.
Oh, my gosh.
He doesn't even know why. His pastor referred the case to me. He's on death row or on capital, up for five capital crimes. I mean, these people don't know. If you go in and do a search engine on homicide and Gulf War veteran, you are going to be shocked.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Joyce, do these people, I mean, do they have remorse afterwards?
Remorse? They don't even want to live. They say, my life is over. You know, I didn't join the military and go serve my country to come back and kill my family. They have no reason to live. One man told me, I know that if I go and work with you, Joyce, I know that, and I try to appeal my case for the sake of helping other Gulf War veterans. He said, they will probably put me on death row. I've been told that by my lawyer. He says, I don't really care. He said, what good is my life when I burn down a house with my twins?
Yeah, he knows. He's destroyed.
Absolutely. And so there's something going on here that is not a bunch of guys who go to a war, come back, and just can't face life again.
Right.
That's not it.
No, there's something else going on. And I think you and Dr. Rocky have put your fingers on it.
Well, and Dr. Rocky has really put himself out there. He is a whistleblower for the Department of Defense, or from the Department of Defense. And with all the work that he's done in DU, he can tell you the inside and out from a physics standpoint. I can't, on depleted uranium. But he gets the calls day and night also from these troops that are desperate for help, that don't know what to do, and are ready to give it up. And I know there's probably thousands.
Well, you'll get some of these calls, Joyce.
I'm sorry?
You'll get some of these calls tonight, I'm sure.
And the emails break my heart after I'm on this show. The letters that I get, the people that are having congenitally deformed babies. I got stopped. I had Gulf War veterans on the side of my car, and I got stopped by a highway patrolman. And he said, I could get in a lot of trouble for stopping you and for what I'm about to do. And I said, what are you about to do? And he said, I need to ask you. He said, my baby was born deaf. And I want to know, is it possible that it was from the Gulf War illness? And he said, nobody will talk to me at the VA or the DOD. And I saw Gulf War veterans on the side of your car, and he started crying. Highway patrolman. He said, I've got to know, is my baby deaf because I served in Desert Storm? You know, and these are the kinds of things that drive these people to the point of you know, not just frustration, but financial. I mean, they're destroyed financially also. It destroys their marriages. 90% at least of all Gulf War veterans are now divorced. So you've got homicide, suicides, but then you've got a Department of Defense who keeps saying, well, gee, we really don't study the number of suicides. We really don't look at how many vets commit suicide. Well, why not then? And why are you not addressing the issue other than, gee, we're going to do another study on this? And what they will end up doing is about as many studies as they've done on the Gulf War illness, costing millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then at all of the end of these studies, they say, well, we haven't been able to prove anything one way or the other. And then you buy the RAND Corporation report, and I mean that euphemistically, but they buy whatever report they want from Institute of Medicine or RAND Corporation that says, well, we find no evidence that depleted uranium causes, you know, ABC problems.
Of course, they're not going to admit it.
They have to not admit it. But what does this mean? This means we have a Department of Defense that is complicit in the deaths of our military. And there are murders out there that are going to happen. Like I told you, I remember telling you explicitly, I said, in this next war, meaning enduring freedom and Iraqi freedom, when we were getting ready to go to war, the second Gulf War, I said, there's going to be even more people coming back sick, dying as a result of this because of the increase of the use of depleted uranium. And I said, you just watch the mental problems and then placing them on the SSRI drugs, which only makes it in spades as bad as it was before, ends up killing these people. And our Department of Defense knows this. But these people are just kicked to the side of the curb.
Joyce, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more with you and Dr. Rocky about this horrible situation on Coast to Coast AM.